Greetings and welcome to the Avianca Group International Limited Lender Update Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief Q&A session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Luca Pfeiffer, Head of Investor Relations for Avianca Group. Thank you, Mr. Pfeiffer. You may begin.
Thank you, Operator. Good afternoon, and thank you all for making time for today's update call. Joining us on our call today is Avianca Group CEO and President Adrian Neuhauser, our CFO Rohit Philip. Today, Adrian will kick off our call with an update on the information published by the group regarding the new holding company Abra, which will hold an economic interest in both Avianca and Gol. In addition, Rohit will walk you through our final first quarter 2022 financial and operational results. We will finalize the call with a question and answer session. With that, let me turn it over to Adrian. Adrian?
Thank you, Luca. Thank you, everyone, for joining today. And we're excited to talk about our first quarter with you and to get a little bit of more of a rhythm going here with disclosures to you. With respect to Abra, which I'm going to talk about briefly before I hand it over to Rohit on Q1 results. As you're all aware, our shareholders, our controlling shareholders, a short while ago announced that they had agreed together with the controlling shareholder of Gol to contribute their respective shares into a holding company to be called Abra that will then allow them to consolidate their economic position in both assets and begin with what they view as the creation of a network of Latin American carriers that will benefit from the ability to generate synergies across the region, best practices across the region, and to provide consistent service across the region. I'm going to give you a quick summary of that, and you can see it. You can see it on the slide that is being projected in the webcast. It's slide 3. But there isn't much more information that has been disclosed on that, and that is by design. As the process winds its way through regulatory approvals, we will provide more disclosure. Both sides are rather limited in what we can say while regulatory is ongoing, and obviously we are being driven more by Gol's limitations on disclosures given their status as a publicly traded company than by ours, and we're respecting that. But the quick summary, subject to regulatory approvals, which I already mentioned, in certain closing conditions, we expect Abra to consolidate both Avianca and Gol and bring together their iconic brands under a single group. And we use the word control there in the broad sense of manage. There's been questions from several of you as to whether we expect this to trip respective changes of control in debt instruments on both sides, and the answer is we do not. Together, we expect both airlines to anchor a network of airlines that will have the lowest unit cost. Everybody's very cost focused in their respective markets. The leading loyalty programs across the region and other synergistic businesses. If you look at Avianca and Gol together, it's about 275 aircraft. If you add Viva to that, which, as you'll recall, we have 100% economic stake in already, you're nearing 300 aircraft. And then there's also a convertible security that represents 42% of Sky. Sky has operations in Chile and in Peru, and they have 27 aircraft. And if we were to convert it, again, we would have a minority stake there, and we could then decide to open discussions for broader consolidation with that partner. We expect all of the airlines, Avianca and Gol, certainly Viva, because of the split control and economics, and eventually anything else that is added here, to maintain independent brands, talent, teams, and cultures, and to benefit from synergies at the holdco level under common aligned ownership, driving, as you'd expect, significant value for the shareholders and for lenders. The group itself will be co-managed and co-controlled by the principal shareholders of Avianca, the controlling shareholder of Gol, and the shareholders in the process of agreeing to make these contributions have also raised commitments from other financial investors for up to $350 million in shares of the group on closing to further strengthen the liquidity position. In terms of timing, we are expecting that approval should be obtained in the second half of the year. And again, as we get closer to that, we will be providing increasing levels of disclosure to you in terms of what the pro forma company looks like, what the actual ownership structure would look like, future plans to provide liquidity to investors up at the holding company level, and how we comply with the different obligations we have with different instruments inside of both groups. So with that, Rohit, turn it over to you for Q1 results. Thank you.
Thanks, Adrian. Good afternoon, everyone. So we'll deliver to the trustee and file in the data room the actual financial statements for Q1, which are the unaudited financial statements, as well as the presentation that we'll go through today. The results are very much in line with the preliminary results that that we walked you through a couple of weeks ago. So I'll sort of focus in the presentation on highlighting the additional sort of information that we've added with sort of the finishing the line items below the EBITDA line item to net income, and walk you through sort of the additional information that we're showing here. So with that, we'll go to slide five. This is the data is pretty much the same as what we had shown a couple of weeks ago in terms of our capacity for Q1 being ahead of business plan, and load factors also being ahead of business plan in Q1. On slide six, there's most of the data is the same. There's some additional information on CASK and CASK ex fuel that we didn't have in the last chart because we hadn't finished the P&L on the May 6th presentation. But if you just a recap on the PRASK and yield, you know, PRASK was up 13% versus business plan, comprised of 11% improvement in yield and 1.5% improvement in load factor. But if you looked at the chart on the bottom right, what I walked through last time, that PRASK improvement of roughly 0.77 cents per ASK was pretty much offset, or entirely offsets the fuel price increase of 0.75 cents per ASK in Q1. So for the quarter, we offset the fuel price with the higher revenue. Q2, we continue to see some strong revenue recovery, but not at 100% like we are seeing in Q1, and we'll obviously cover that more as we go through the Q2 results. But the information again on slide six on the top right in terms of CASK, you can see our CASK ex fuel was 5.36 cents versus 5.35 cents in the business plan, so roughly in line with the business plan. The one thing that that I will point out, and we'll provide a little bit more detail to you guys in the next week to sort of get you to walk you through the reconciliation of the business plan with sort of the new IFRS 3 accounting that we did, where we revalued all the assets and liabilities. And in a nutshell, there's about $60 million more of amortization expense. Part of the business plan CASK ex fuel of 5.35, when you adjust for the additional amortization expense based on the revaluation, would have added another 20 cents in the quarter. So we're a little bit better than what we would have had on an adjusted basis. And as I said, we'll provide a more detailed reconciliation for you on how to reconcile the business plan for the to the adjusted to the adjustments we made based on revaluing the balance sheet. So we'll have a new sort of baseline to compare results going forward to that we'll walk you through. Bottom line is the CASK on CASK ex fuel is trending at or slightly ahead of plan. So if you go to slide 7, just a reminder that that 5.36 that we see in Q1 will still is still very much in line with the plan that gets us to 3.88 by December, a run rate of 3.88 in December, and a 3.4 cent CASK ex fuel in 2023. In slide 8, again, this is the same information that we had provided a couple of weeks ago. Cargo revenue continues to be strong, and with increased rates, certainly on the cargo side, we're able to offset the not only offset the fuel price recovery, but also outperform what we had in expected in the business plan. If we move to slide 9 and life miles, again, this chart is exactly the same as what we shared with you a couple of weeks ago. In fact, we had a life miles investor call this morning, and on this chart on the top right, which has life miles cash EBITDA to Avianca Group, it's a little different from the life miles EBITDA chart that they show in the life miles investor presentation. And the only difference is that in our numbers here, we eliminate the intercompany for the payments of both. We eliminate the price, what Avianca pays to Life Miles when, you know, to buy miles, and what Life Miles pays to us to redeem tickets, because they just, since now Life Miles is 100% subsidiary, we eliminate those in this view. So this view is a little bit different from the Life Miles legal entity view. The numbers are the same as what I presented 2 weeks ago. So with that, if we go to slide 10, this is sort of a full P&L view. I think if you recall, a couple of weeks ago, we showed you up to the EBITDA level. Now we show it up to the net income level. So if you focus on the net income level, you know, our business plan was, just a reminder, our business plan was projecting a loss in Q1 and Q2 and then turning a positive in the second half of the year. In line with that, we are ahead of the business plan, $36 million in net income, $47 million in EBITDA, ahead of business plan. With this, if you look again below the EBITDA line, there's a little bit of a difference in aircraft rentals and depreciation and amortization that somewhat offset each other because of what I had mentioned on the last call, which is that there was a little bit of a longer time to convert all the PBH deals into final long-term leases. So that's why you see a little bit more rental expense versus business plan and a little lower depreciation versus business plan. The net is slightly higher because obviously we deployed more capacity in Q1 than what we had in the business plan. With that, we have all the stats on the right, which you can walk through and we post this in the data room. But if I go to slide 11, we just have a bridge business plan to actual results. The top bar I won't go through. We went through last couple of weeks ago with the bridge on EBITDA. But on the net income side, the moving parts are roughly the same. I mean, you can see the PRASK incremental revenue versus the incremental cost pretty much the same. The cargo performance also driving a similar result. The capacity at the net income level, when you take the depreciation and amortization, obviously reduces that a little bit. But essentially, the bridge is kind of in line with the EBITDA bridge. With that, going to slide 12, again, no changes in in slide 12 from what we went through a couple weeks ago. The ending cash balance, we look at the bottom line for Q1, was $1.2 billion versus $914 million in the business plan, so roughly $300 million ahead. Just a note on that's at the bottom of the page, that to reconcile this number with the balance sheet, which I'll show you on the next page, you add sort of the first three lines of the balance sheet, which is the cash and cash equivalents, the restricted cash and short-term investments. And we subtracted from this view, there was an escrow account of to pay some remaining professional fees for Avianca, winding down Avianca Holdings of $4.7 million. We excluded from this view, but on the balance sheet, you actually see that additional $4.7 million. So that will reconcile with the final cash number to the balance sheet number. So if we move to slide 13 then, with the balance sheet, you'll see the first three line items will tie to the cash number that we talked about on the previous page. So then a couple of things that I'll mention. If you look at note A on assets held for sale, you'll see that that we had executed a bunch of the sale leasebacks that were expected to be done in Q1. So the remaining number of assets held for sale is just $19 million. And that is associated with the decision we've made to sell our ground handling business called SAI. So from an accounting standpoint, while the transaction is not closed, the assets and the are just put in the assets and liabilities are sort of put in a separate account pending the sale. And then item B, footnote B, is relating to the property, plant, and equipment net, which is increased based on, again, the sale-leaseback deals that were executed in the quarter. So if we move then to the liability side of the balance sheet on slide 14, a couple of things to note again. Note A on debt, which is both on the short in the current and as well as long term. Again, the increase is associated with what I just mentioned, which is the lease agreements that we signed in Q1. In the item B, the increase in air traffic liability is related to an increase in forward sales. If you recall, I had mentioned that this included that our balance in December 31st included about $140 million of UATP credits that we had issued as refunds. In addition, and the remaining is obviously forward sales. And in the March 31st number, out of the $617 million, there's $127 million that's associated with the UATP liability. The rest is forward sales. And then item C, as I mentioned on the last call as well, we do have a little bit more conservative lease return provision. So as we've added the additional long-term leases, we've added the provisions related to lease return conditions into the liabilities. So that's the notes I wanted to point out on the balance sheet. And with that, I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. So with that, we'll open it. We'll turn it back to the operator to introduce the Q&A.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you have a question or comment, please press star 1 on your touch tone phone. Pressing star 2 will remove you from the queue should your question be answered. And lastly, while posing your question, please pick up your handset if listening on speakerphone to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. Once again, that's star 1 if you have a question or a comment. And your first question is coming from Michael Linenberg with Deutsche Bank.
Oh, hey, good afternoon. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Find my face.
Hey, Adrian, Rohit, and Luca. Just a couple questions here. I just to start out, just to kind of get a level, sort of a base here, with respect to seasonality, I mean, there have been a lot of structural changes to the company's route network. And I think, Rohit, you mentioned that you're anticipating losses in the March and June quarter, but then profitability in the second half of the year. That said, you're still sort of climbing out of a hole here, you know, with COVID, et cetera. How should we think about just profitability quarter-wise, like going forward on, in a more normal environment? Is this going to be a company that makes most of its money in either the September quarter, December quarter? Can you just rank your quarters on a seasonality basis, profitability-wise?
Sure. Let me take a stab at that. Summer is our strongest quarter, Mike, and that's followed by December. The second quarter, which is where we are now, tends to be the weakest, right? And first quarter is actually closer to second quarter than it is to three and four. You know, part of that, and you're intuiting it, right? But part of that is, we've never taken advantage of countercyclicality on the far southern end of our network, right? So, we have kind of in first quarter we have some carryover benefit from Christmas holidays, et cetera, the return part of that, right, leading into January. But we don't actually generate much outbound demand, back half of January or February, which is very different from, southern Brazil, Chile, Peru, et cetera, right? So that makes first quarter a bit of a mix. And then second quarter, we really don't have anything to make it a bright spot other than Easter, right? Which is a very kind of short peak in there. So second quarter tends to be weakest. But you're right. That seasonality line is overlaying on a ramp, right? Because we also we're still climbing out, and that's why it's important to look at the business plan that we put out there on a quarter by quarter basis and understand that we are kind of, getting hit by the double whammy in the first quarter. That was built in, and that's why, we're pretty proud to have outperformed, even with, higher fuel and a wave of Omicron hitting us in there, right? But it is structurally a relatively weak quarter until we find some way to shift capacity, at least during part of that quarter.
Okay, great. And then just a second question here. Adrian, you talked about, getting approvals in the second half of the year. When we think about approvals, what do we need? Do we need ANAKI? Do we need the Chilean antitrust authorities? Anything outside of the continent, say from the U.S.? Like, what do you need? And I sort of as a add-on to that question, you did mention that you currently are benefiting in getting 100% of the economics with the merger between Avianca and Viva, the Viva Group. What is the voting percentages there? And if it is, say, zero, are there, the intent to take that percentage up over time, or is it just it's all about 100% of the economics, end of story?
Sure. So on the first one, it's ANAC and it's DOT and HSR. Chile would have oversight over over any transaction we did eventually with Sky.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily over the conversion itself, because mm-hmm. That's a non-controlling stake, but anything that we wanted to do further, we would. And arguably, even the conversion is something we would discuss with the Chilean authorities, because Chile has one of the world's strictest antitrust regimes that includes interlocking, things like that. So we want to make sure we don't get we don't get on the wrong side of that, right? But for purposes of this transaction in particular, it's Anak and it's the U.S.
Okay.
In terms of your second question, look, right now, our worst case scenario is that we just hold the current structure, right? Which basically is the voting is in a trust, and there are trustees that have fiduciary obligations to do the best thing for that company that ultimately vote it, and we receive 100% of the economics.
Mm-hmm.
As we move forward, we have the right to acquire 100% of those economics of that vote. For a nominal amount. Subject to having approval to do it, right? And the question is, do we request approval, and if we do, when? And it's something we're still reviewing, right? We expect that to be a relatively long and negotiated process, right? Because of the discussions we're going to have on potential overlap, et cetera. We don't think it will be a short process. And there's elections right now, so I think the natural act is to allow the elections to happen and then have the conversation. Once instead of starting them and then starting them over again. But that's something we're still reviewing. We're frankly, not uncomfortable with the current position, right? The current position, aligns both entities economically, imposes rationality on the market, and we believe is kind of a healthy place to start. Control and the ability to coordinate and price jointly and things like that would be some really nice icing on the cake. But we're not at all unhappy with where it is right now.
Okay. And then that's great. And then just if I could just squeeze in the third one and I'll get back in line. But if I realize that you're limited in what you can say about Abra, but you did say a decent amount sort of piqued my interest. If I were to sort of fast forward 9 months from now or 12 months from now, is a likely structure to have some amount of Avianca shares that are listed in the public markets, Gol shares that are listed in the public markets, and maybe they're both minority positions, but they're still investors can partake, as well as the ability for investors to invest in Abra shares in the public markets. Is that a potential or likely structure, or is it just you're still working through the dynamics?
I think that complete picture is unlikely because our vision is that the holdco should be a value creating device, right? And so the idea that you're going to have kind of the ability to build your own portfolio underneath and kind of cut around that negates that a little bit. So I think our plan prior to this happening, right, was to create public liquidity for Avianca. I think at least as regards Avianca, our vision now, and obviously depends on timing and on everyone else agreeing, but our vision right now is that Avianca liquidity would certainly be through the holdco, right? As to whether Gol remains listed or not, I think that's something that you need to discuss with the Gol side of things, right? The stated vision of the parties that are creating this is that they don't intend to leave anyone behind that doesn't want to be left behind, right? So there's no vision that that people wouldn't have the right to benefit from moving up, right? But whether ultimately they decide to or not, or how it's done, I think is something is best asked and call.
So the reports out there that have said this is like an IAG like structure, it sounds like that they're accurate. That's right.
I think that's the closest kind of comp that people have seen to. And the investors that back this have seen to kind of what we're trying to do, right? And part of it, Mike, is you know, when you start thinking about consolidation across the region, you know, your natural tendency is to say, well, gee, you know, we should merge. But the reality is, you know, a lot of these mergers aren't really mergers behind the scenes either, right? I mean, we operate, you know, depending on how you want to count them, 6 or 7 AOCs, right?
Yep.
You know, and we can't bring them together, and so we have the complexity of that, right? We have the different employment agreements, we have the different flight rules, we have the different regulators, we have the different, you know, disclosure and filing and et cetera obligations in all those markets. And just putting an umbrella on top of that says there's a single brand has never negated that complexity. It's just kind of hidden it from public view, right? And you know, even you know, we can say this because we're new to this, right? But I think, you know, the team that you've got at Avianca now, we're still often surprised by, you know, how you still find, you know, dredges of the Tata contingent versus the Avianca contingent 10 years later, right? Because mm-hmm. you haven't been able to fully collapse these things, because ultimately, again, you have things that you simply cannot collapse. It's very different from doing kind of a single market deal where ultimately what you're trying to do is get to a single pilot agreement, a single AOC, single flight rule, single manual, single, et cetera, right? So we can't do that. And so once you say, okay, well, you can't do that, then you know, how much are those synergies that you can extract, which are therefore not those cost synergies that you – sorry, once you say you can't do that, then you have cost synergies that you can extract anyway, right, via centralizing them in a holdco, like big contract negotiations, things like that. You have cost synergies that you can't extract because you have to keep these AOCs separate, right? And then you have cost synergies that you could extract even with the separate AOCs, but that require a lot of pain, right? And trying to kind of consolidate management and things like that. And so then the question is, okay, well, you know, is the proverbial juice worth the squeeze? Because while you're focused on, you know, collapsing, you know, two instances of SAP into a single instance of SAP, you're not focused on, you know, selling more, optimizing your network, selling better, et cetera, right? And I think the conclusion our investors came to is it's not worth the squeeze, right? Ultimately, the friction that you create and the amount of management distraction and time that you create kind of trying to extract those pretty small bucks that you can ultimately extract that are ultimately in the middle, right? There's the ones that you can't extract because you need the separate AOCs, the ones that you can extract anyway because you can escalate them to the centralization at the holdco. And then the ones in the middle just don't seem to be worth it versus the friction and the risk and the distraction you take. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, very helpful. Thanks. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Yep. Thanks, Mike.
If there are any remaining questions or comments, please indicate so now by pressing *1 on your touch tone phone. Once again, that's *1 if you have a question or a comment.
Operator, I guess if we don't have anything else, I'll just some concluding remarks. So first of all, thank you all for joining. Thank you again, as I stated on the past call, for the patience you've had with us while we've had limited disclosure. And again, you'll see us get a better rhythm here going in terms of disclosure. I think, you know, we're proud of the quarter that we were able to deliver. With rising fuel, with Omicron, with all the changes we're making, as Rohit said, the things that are under our control, like costs, we are outperforming. We're selling more than we had in the plan, and we're proud of that. Our cargo team has been doing an amazing job outperforming there, and so we're proud of that. Right. The obvious word of caution is, and it'll be obvious to all of you, right, is that quarter had a fuel spike in 1 month out of the quarter, right? And we've been dealing with the current quarter where fuel has remained high throughout the quarter, and we expect it to to remain high throughout the quarter, right? We do not expect to be able to pass through fuel fully this quarter. We're in particular also because it is seasonally our weakest quarter, right? So those two things combined are obviously not helping. The team is doing a great job recapturing all they can, and we continue to be kind of very, very, very focused on delivering the full year performance that we've committed to. It is and remains a challenging environment, in particular with higher fuel. And we designed for that. That's why we have the liquidity we have, and then we're controlling what we can. We're continuing to overperform on cost, and we think that's a structural change that will ultimately, place us in a very solid competitive position for the long term as well. So again, proud of what we're doing. Cautious as to the quarter we're in, just given kind of sustained high fuel. And optimistic for the future. That's the summary of where we are, and hope to be talking to you guys again shortly. So anything that you'd like to add?
No, just on a logistics standpoint, I just want to add if anyone still has a problem accessing the information in the data room, reach out to us and we'll square that away. And we will be posting within the next week a more detailed sort of guideline to sort of reconcile the business plan with the balance sheet with the revalued balance sheet. So you'll have a good guideline as to what benchmark we would be comparing results against. So we'll post that shortly. So you'll have access to that as well. That's it from my end. And thank you all for taking the time to join, and looking forward to continued discussions with all of you.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your phone lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.